This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, May 11th, 2023. I'm Caleb Brown. American employment is increasingly subject to government permission in the form of occupational licensing. Many states are making headway, making it easier for the average American to seize opportunity and serve their fellows without a government permission slip. I spoke with Steve Slavinsky of the Pacific Legal Foundation and Stephen Doan, a Republican state representative in Kentucky, about opportunities to cut the red tape that is occupational licensing.
We have two Steves here. So just for the purposes of taxonomy for the rest of this discussion, Steve Slavinsky, you're Steve. Stephen Doan, you are Stephen for the purposes of this discussion. So to you, Steve Slavinsky, occupational licensing has become more prominent over the past decade or so. The outgoing Obama administration made reference to licensing reform as a serious issue that states ought to be taking seriously. That was several years ago. Where do things stand right now? Have we seen big changes in the degree to which states impose licensing requirements on people who just want to work?
So not as much as you would like to have happen, certainly, especially since there's a lot of understanding of the issue. In fact, this is one of those policy areas where we know what the problems are, and we actually even know what the solutions are. But getting those solutions across the finish line legislatively actually is quite difficult some of the time. The goal should be overall, I think, for most states to reduce the burden of the licensing, basically meaning reduce the number of hours that are required to get a license. And frankly, I would say even getting rid of licenses that really have no purpose anymore. They might have served a purpose 40 or 50 years ago, but they no longer do now in a modern workforce. Another problem that we're also seeing is mobility of the workforce. Now, that's not a problem. Mobility of a workforce is actually a very good thing. It's a sign of progress, a sign of technological change, the fact that we can do our jobs from any part of the country for a lot of us. But the mobility issue becomes problematic when it intersects and collides with licensing, in that people actually will often stay put in their home state or county or town, even if the employment prospects are dim where they live, because they know if they move across a state line, although they don't lose their expertise in their field, they lose their ability to be licensed in that new state. And a lot of times you'll see people having to go through duplicative processes, paying multiple fees that they've already paid just to get a license in their new state. As a result, the empirical data we've seen on this indicate that the people who have licenses that are not reciprocal, meaning you don't get a version of it when you move to a new state, like a driver's license, for instance, is a good example. Occupational licenses don't work that way. And so people who have a license that is not reciprocal with another state typically will stay put. And as a result, that actually harms their employment prospects. So the new frontier, at least in the short term, I think, for what we've seen on licensing reform since the Obama report and since there's been such a great amount of attention to this issue, is the idea that states are allowing new workers entering to, if they have a license in good standing from their state of origin, to get a reciprocal license right upon arrival. They can hang out their shingle right when they get to their new city or state.
So, Stephen Doan, you're a state representative representing a part of Northern Kentucky. So when you go to Frankfort, how much awareness is there of this issue?
It's one that's gotten a lot more attention over the years, but not so much as we get here in Northern Kentucky. You know, we're uniquely positioned geographically with Cincinnati to the north. It's a huge economic powerhouse that provides a lot of jobs for people in Northern Kentucky. And one of the things that I encountered as I was campaigning for this office and as I became a state representative was people wanted to be able to open up a business here in Northern Kentucky because we are booming. We're one of the boom centers here in Kentucky overall. And what they found is they couldn't do that. They had to go through these overly burdensome licensing processes, and it would take months or even years sometimes for people to get licensed. So that boiled to the surface quite quickly for me in Northern Kentucky. But when I got down to Frankfort, I realized that it wasn't necessarily a priority for the rest of the state, which is quite rural in some parts, and a lot of the rural areas hold some of those power bases. So it's difficult to push those issues to the top.
It's interesting because one of the frequent claims I hear about Kentucky in particular, because of course I'm in Kentucky as well, so is that a huge fraction of the state's population lives within a few miles of a state border. So you would think that anybody who's engaged in some sort of occupation would want the ability to, well, I'm just going to go do some work over here in Tennessee or Illinois or Missouri or Indiana or Ohio. And it strikes me as odd that this is not something that is of greater interest. But you're advancing a proposal that would effectively give reciprocity. What does that look like in practice?
Yeah, so in practice, the way that the bill is, House Bill 343 is what I proposed last legislative session. The way that would work is we would essentially streamline that out-of-state licensing requirement here in Kentucky. So you would pay a $100 application fee. It would go before the board. It's a shall issue if you meet the minimum educational standards. If you're licensed, so two different segments here. If you have a license within the state or you have a license outside of the state. Kentucky's quite unique in the sense that we require a lot more licenses, or we license a lot more occupations than other states around us do. So one of those particular examples is, I believe, taxidermy. We require you to have a taxidermy license. I think Indiana and Ohio don't. And somebody from Indiana and Ohio will probably jump in the comments to correct me if I'm wrong. But we do that here. And so if Kentucky has a license that Ohio doesn't, we would at least require 1 to 3 years. Currently, the bill's written at three. I'm going to move that down to one, of actual practice in that trade to get you licensed here in Kentucky or and through the process.
So, Steve, what's the? I know you've done a lot of research on the impacts of some of these laws on specific areas, but you know, with a state like Kentucky, or you know, frankly, any state that has a lot of states immediately around it, how impactful is the licensing in one state across the border in another state? Like, you know, to the extent that you're trying to be tactical, you're trying to be strategic with licensing, how does a lack of licenses or the prevalence of licenses impact decisions across the state?
Well, certainly it can impact the decision whether to move out of your current state or into another state altogether. It can also be a significant factor in what you've already identified, the fact that you've got so many people living kind of in border areas, so close to a border. And that's a very unique geographic reality for Kentucky. You can think of other classic examples of a Kansas City. You've got part of it on the Kansas side and part of it on the Missouri side. Missouri actually has recently enacted a law that was a form of universal reciprocity. And I do know lots of people who live in Kansas and work in Missouri. And this is actually a very big deal for them, right? In a sense, it basically neutralizes the decision of whether you have to live in the same state that you work in. And in fact, that's a real thing, like you said, on border towns. And so it can really absolutely impact the decision. You can also consider people who will run companies that have the need to, say, run trucks across a border or deliver product one way or another, or have clients. Let's say you're a realtor. You have clients in both states, right, if you're on the border. So again, this is a real actual improvement in their employment prospects, especially if you're living near a border like that.
So, Stephen, if I understand universal reciprocity well, I'm not sure that I do, but the idea is that instead of using one licensing board in Kentucky, the Kentucky licensing board for whatever the occupation might be, you're essentially saying, if you're good enough to be licensed in other states, you're good enough to be licensed here if you've practiced for a year. What about occupations where other states don't license it and those people come to Kentucky?
Yeah, so the way that the bill's currently written, it's on a three-year time frame. So if you were a taxidermist up in Ohio and you had practiced that for three years, you'd be able to provide proof of that to the Kentucky Board of I guess it's taxonomy, I would guess, maybe not. You'd be able to do that there and then come in and be licensed in Kentucky.
So more broadly, though, economically, Steve, what, you know, Ed Glaser has done a bunch of work at Harvard on zoning, which is essentially licensing the uses of your own property. And he says, hey, we're leaving trillions of dollars of GDP on the table just by having this regime in terms of people being able to move across borders easily and get to where the opportunities might be, where prices might be too high in some field, and they want to compete. They want to throw up their shingle and take advantage of those high prices. What are we leaving on the table when we have these 50 different regimes of licensing for so much of the workforce?
Yeah, you've identified what could basically be called a deadweight loss. We talk about this in tax policy all the time, but tax rates being too high and it chokes off new productivity, new business ideas, things of that sort. Licensing boards do the same thing and licensing laws do the same thing. And in fact, I think what you want to see over time, and I think reciprocity is one of the ways that gets us part of the way there. I don't think it's a panacea and it's not a cure-all, but it's definitely going to solve a lot of short-term problems that we have. One of those problems is that you've often got licensing boards that are, in a sense, competing to keep out people from coming in to a profession. I think, though, if you're opening up reciprocity, you are effectively opening up competition between states to attract workers. And as a result, it takes the boards out of the question. It's a shall issue default assumption, as Stephen had already mentioned, right? So in a sense, the boards can't be arbitrary about keeping out new entrepreneurs the way they have been in the past. And so I do think this is going to unlock a new amount of potential new business starts for cities and counties and states that have this kind of law. And I think over time, it's going to put pressure on states to think about alternative ways of certifying expertise, right? We talk a lot about how if you have a license, a good standing with a lot of the reciprocity bills in your current home state, and you show that, you present that, then you get the new license in the new state. But what if, as Stephen already identified, what if you don't have a license from a state that you're living in because they don't currently have that license, right? But yet you know you're moving to a new state that does require that license. And so it's showing that you have an expertise, a certain number of years of expertise. That's what the universal reciprocity idea is much broader than just simply a one-for-one trade between license A and license B. And so effectively what this is doing is it's creating more competition, I think, for more opportunity between states and not less as the current system does.
Stephen, what do you, when you make pitches for this idea, who do you sense or who do you feel or who have you heard from that are the people who are the big beneficiaries of the current regime? We like things just the way they are. Thank you very much.
So, it's all about stories. Really, that's what it comes down to. If you want to get anything done, you have to have a story behind it, particularly in Frankfurt, because most people just don't care. And so you start telling the stories of people, of how I got here to wanting to propose this legislation. Business owners in Northern Kentucky are fleeing Northern Kentucky because they can't hire people, but you can hire people in Ohio. Ohio passed universal reciprocity last legislative session. And so one of the small business owners, if I look out the window behind me, I can actually see her small business. She's a cosmetologist. And throughout the process, throughout this legislative session, she would send me messages and say, hey, I need an update on the legislation. Is it going to pass? Is it going to pass? Are we going to get that through? Because if not, I'm leaving Kentucky. I'm moving to Ohio where I can hire people, where I can get them licensed in cosmetology. She would have people that just wanted to come in and do nails or eyebrows, and it would take them 6 months to a year to get licensed through the board because there was no reciprocity. Ultimately, my bill didn't pass, but we did pass a compact, a cosmetology compact, so there was some help there. But when you start to tell those stories, you see other groups start to move in your way. One that kind of surprised me was our Northern Kentucky Chamber. They oftentimes do the bidding of big business and keep other people out so that we can promote those Kentucky businesses. But they started to ease up on the issue, and they've come in to support me. I'm still waiting on the full state chamber to come in behind me, but I expect that to happen next session.
Stephen Doan is a Republican state representative in Kentucky. Steve Slavinsky is an economist and researcher at the Pacific Legal Foundation. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.